Well, today we have a lovely story. On 40 days after the birth of an eldest son, the Jewish couple was expected to present the child to God in the temple. And today is 40 days since Christmas, so all these feast days are put in somewhat logical order. Let me say a number of things. I don't know that it's going to deserve to be called a homily. Just some scattered ideas that come from the text. First of all, you know, if they're presenting him to God, I think you have a good indication Mary and Joseph are not walking around thinking he is God. Can you imagine what a burden that would have been if you really thought you were changing the diapers of God? No, they had to live in faith, and he had to live in faith, just like we do. And that's revealed in the very final verse of the gospel, where it says, the child grew in wisdom, age, and grace, which means he had to grow up just like you and I do. Most theologians would say the full consciousness of Jesus, that he was the Son of God, probably could not have been born by him or understood by him with his human mind until the resurrection. And that's why when he dies on the cross and he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? He really means it. He's really feeling it. He has to walk at the same darkness and light that you and I have to walk with. And that's why all the symbolism this day, halfway to spring, is the symbolism of darkness and light. Now, the best the secular culture could do was make it Groundhog Day, where we get the groundhog out and see if he can see the light. But do you see that it's the same primitive symbolism of understanding? I'm sure the people in the Northeast are thinking this after the cold winter they have endured. But halfway through winter, you start, of course, longing for spring, hoping for warmth, hoping for light. So as I said at the beginning, this was the traditional day on which all the candles were blessed for the whole year, to promise there would be light and warmth for the whole year. But back to the text. Another giveaway. Their offering is a pair of turtle doves, or two young pigeons, as it says. Now, if you go back to Leviticus, this is a giveaway that Mary and Joseph were of the poorest class. Normal people had to give a sheep or a goat, but the poor people could not afford that. And so it said, if you can't afford it, when you offer your child in the temple, you can give a mere two doves. Of course, symbolically, when Jesus grows up, when he releases the doves from the temple and opens the cages and cleanses the temple, he's saying, this is all over. This paying for God. You can't pay for God. You can't pay for a blessing. You can't earn grace. You can't earn love. And so he frees the animals, because even this is what we call a debt code or a purity code, which religion is for some reason very subject to. I know some of you in your sweetness sometimes come to me and say, Father, here's $10. Will you say a mass for my mother? Well, I said, I don't need $10. A mass doesn't cost anything, but of course it's your desire to be generous and to give something. But unfortunately, it creates this sense of tit for tat, I got to pay for God. You can't pay for grace. The moment you're open to it, you receive it. Did you know that? The moment you believe in mercy, you receive mercy. The moment you accept forgiveness as possible from God, you are forgiven. So we can't put too many intermediaries in between. And far too often we priests have put ourselves in between, as if we're necessary for you to know God. I don't think so. Now, on the other side, we have in this gospel, when they come to the temple, there are in fact two holy people sitting there who do perhaps serve as intermediaries. This is, some say, the beginning of the tradition of the padrino, the godfather and the godmother. that Simeon, in male form, receives the child, blesses the child, but also gives a rather daring prophecy, which we'll talk about in a minute. And Anna, who's an old widow, she's 84, and she lived 7 years with her husband after her marriage and then as a widow, so she's been there a long time. And it says she's simply waiting for God. So we have these two people, Anna, the prophetess, Simeon, the holy man, symbol of the Godfather, the Godmother, who received the child, and as holy as Mary and Joseph were, it might be interpreted that even they needed help. Even they needed aunts and uncles and friends. And that's where the tradition began. That to raise one child by one couple was too much. It takes a family, as we say today. It takes a village. It takes a community. It takes grandma and grandpa and Tio and Tia and everybody else to join together and all to care for the child. But notice that the words of Simeon are maybe even disturbing. This child is destined to be the cause of the falling of many and the rising of many. He will be a sign of contradiction, sometimes translated a sign to be rejected. And the next line is where we got all those pictures of the Mater Dolorosa. And a sword will pierce your heart. And so it isn't a happy baptismal ceremony like we like, but in fact it's a rather foreboding ceremony. If you raise this child, know you're going to suffer. And of course, that's probably true for every one of you who's been a mother or father in this room. When you love anything totally, anyone totally, you will suffer. You'll pay a price for that love, for being faithful to that love. But then another telling line, but this sword will pierce your heart. You'll have a broken heart, Mary. But because of this, the thoughts of many other hearts will be revealed. You know, we really don't open up to ourselves, to one another, or to God until someone shares their pain, until someone shares their grief. So we have, out of rejection and grief and suffering, the thoughts of many other hearts will be revealed. You know who understands that well today are the 12-step people. They come together and they all admit publicly to one another. Not that they're great and they're holy like we sometimes think because we come to church. But the first thing they say is, "Hi, I'm Bill. I'm an alcoholic." "Hi, I'm Mary. I'm a sinner," as it were. You see, that levels the playing field. Then, if you've ever been to such a meeting, then the hearts of many others are revealed. Once one person gets honest and humble and real, then everybody else can get humble and honest and real. When I was a little boy growing up in Kansas, we all had to dress up in our best clothes to come to Mass on Sunday. I don't know if we were trying to impress God or impress one another. It's nice to wear nice clothes, but the illusion that went with it is I've got to show that I'm a nice person. And I hope and I'm sure you are a nice person. But in fact, a gathering of nice people usually does not go very deep. Did you know that? Because we're all trying to prove to one another that we're nice. But if just one person can reveal the sword in their heart, in the right context, the right place, the right way, of course, then, and probably only then, are the thoughts of many other hearts opened up and revealed.